Welcome to Law Subscribed. This is your dedicated news source for all things subscriptions and the law. My name is Matthew Kerbis. I'm the subscription attorney, and I believe subscriptions can help bridge the access to justice gap and incentivize attorneys to modernize and scale their practice like never before. In this episode, I interview Daniel DiMaria. Daniel is a co-founder of Spellbook, a generative AI tool to help lawyers draft contracts that was on the market before the release of ChatGPT. More relevant to this podcast is Daniel's offering through Rally, a tool that helps lawyers run a subscription-based law practice. We discuss how generative AI can help lawyers improve efficiency and why that means billing time doesn't make sense, and how his products at Spellbook and Rally can help you run a streamlined and profitable subscription law firm. I'm starting to release videos of my podcast to my Substack subscribers, starting with last week and now moving forward, even to the free subscribers. Daniel gave a quick video demo of Spellbook, and I know 80% of my listeners still haven't subscribed on Substack. So now you have a great reason to go to lawsubscribe.com and join the Substack using the form on the homepage. I have several more episodes with legal tech companies using generative AI in the coming weeks, and if this is a topic that you like to consume, then consider coming to the ABA Tech Show in Chicago this February, where I'll be presenting on the subject matter and how to use it in your subscription model. Thanks to my sponsors, 650 and Gavel, links to both in the show notes, more on them later, and remember to use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED when signing up. It lets them know you found out about them from the podcast, you get 10% off, and it supports the show. Another way to support the show is to share it with someone you know. This podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only, and nothing said is legal, ethical, or financial advice. Without further delay, here's the episode. Daniel DiMaria, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, Law Subscribed.
Yeah, awesome. Really, really happy to be here. I'm looking forward to this, man.
So we've known each other at least for a little bit, got to see each other at Tech Show in Chicago for the first time in person, which was great. But for those of you, of my listeners who haven't heard of you or Rally or Spellbook, please go ahead and introduce yourself to my listeners.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, so my story is probably a little bit typical as far as entrepreneurs go in the legal space, legal tech space with a formal legal background. So, I mean, I was always entrepreneurial first and foremost. Even during law school, I really had the appetite to like start companies. When I first took like my first corporate law course in 2L, I was like, oh, these corporations are so cool. I want to make a corporation. Like that was actually kind of like the genesis of like why I wanted to start companies, because I was so interested in just how these, you know, businesses were organized and how it all worked. And I mean, I guess a lot of my colleagues were excited about actually helping these companies, you know, with their legal processes as corporate lawyers do. But I was more excited to actually be a part of a corporation in a business way, which is kind of interesting. I studied liberal arts in undergrad, went to school in Canada, where I grew up in the Toronto area. I studied philosophy. And then pretty much knew, I think midway through undergrad, that I wanted to get into law. I went to law school also in Canada, in Southern Ontario area, a school called Western. I graduated, practiced for about a year, got licensed in my native Ontario. And during the first year of practice, I pretty much decided that I wanted to start a legal tech company. You know, I found myself really obsessed with different technology tools and had a passion for helping lawyers, helping the, you know, the group that I kind of came from and was educated in. So it made sense to try and start something legal. The first product that we started is the product called Rally, which is the company's namesake, Rally. We started that pretty much, I would say, like 6 to 8 months after I finished practicing for my first year. And we really wanted to build something to help lawyers reduce the drudgery experienced in drafting document sets. Like I found that the experience of drafting documents, first drafts, were typically very tedious, a lot of copy and paste, a lot of pulling previous matters that are closed, that are similar in facts, or pulling templates if your firm has those. Many small boutique firms, even mid-sized firms, don't have those. And often those of the larger firms can be outdated or need a lot of editing. So we built a template-based automation system, you know, which is Rally, and that's, you know, one of our two products. We, you know, we built our tech company, I guess, in a pretty traditional way. We raised money through the venture space a couple of times, and we, you know, we operated Rally. We can talk more a little about Rally, I'm sure we will later on in the podcast, but we operated Rally for a few years. I want to say about 3.5-4 years. We were operating Rally, growing it. Really found our niche among transactional practice groups, typically at the mid-size and boutique and kind of small firm segment of the market. But we definitely work with some larger firms. In fact, one of our, you know, first customers was a 500 lawyer firm. And we got really into AI, which I guess is a trend right now. We got into it before it was a trend.
You guys were in it before it was cool, because that's when I demoed Spellbook. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. So yeah, I mean, our story was you know, we always kind of had our head in a swivel in the space. We always were looking at ways of adding new functionality to our product or adding new products entirely that we think benefited lawyers with the modern technology that was available, you know, at the time. We, of course, spent our time in two different worlds, both the, you know, lawyer world, working with lawyers, helping lawyers, and the software development. And that's a big part of any tech company that's, you know, a SaaS company like ours. We spent a bunch of time developing our systems, researching new ways of making them better and adding new products. So we saw GitHub Copilot in action in around 2021. And for those who aren't familiar with GitHub Copilot, it's a large language model based tool that enables developers to automatically generate code and review code. So kind of like, you know, ChatGPT for developers, I guess is a way of describing it. So we saw that in action and started using it. And this would have been around 2021, I think second half of 2021. And we, you know, kind of had that aha moment. We're like, okay, wait, like this is really cool technology. Lawyers could really use this. I mean, like our whole like thesis was lawyers, like developers, you know, build these document sets, this language that has actual effects in the world. Unlike, you know, developers, you don't like run a compiler and kind of see what works and what doesn't. It kind of goes into the world and whether it's tested in litigation or, you know, a contract being negotiated or whatever, but it's kind of similar.
I've often said, and I did not come up with this, but I say it a lot, is law is the operating system of society and the lawyers are the coders or the programmers, right?
Yeah, that's really good. I don't know if you've ever seen Red Coast and his theory of the firm. Okay, anyway, yeah, kind of similar to that. Reminded me of that. I haven't looked at it for years since law school, but yeah, kind of reminded me of that. How like, you know, any organization is like a system of promises, system of contracts, basically. So yeah, definitely agree with that one for sure, wherever you got that one from. So we saw GitHub Copilot in action. We thought that there was a great use case for lawyers. And we pretty much started researching and then building Spellbook around that time. And, you know, since we launched Spellbook in kind of its like soft launch, early access, if you will, release, which would have been end of Q3, early Q4 of last year, 2022. So I guess we're coming up on a year now since it was initially launched. It's pretty crazy. So it's absolutely taken off. I mean, it's really kind of just absorbed the whole company and its focus. We're actually rebranding from Rally to Spellbook if we haven't already. So we are very much Spellbook now going forward, even though we still have our Rally legal emails right now. So yeah, that's kind of the story at a 30,000 foot view, I'd say.
Yeah. I mean, what a great, I mean, there's so many great just entrepreneurial lessons with that, right? To lean into what's working, to go with the rebrand of like the new product, right? Like even with my own law firm, Subscription Attorney LLC, I do get questions a lot. Well, what is that? And I find myself describing, well, it's like, you know, you offload your legal to me. I'm your fractional in-house counsel. Now you, the small mm-hmm. business owner, never have to worry about legal again because you've offloaded it to me. Well, lo and behold, offloadlegal.com was available. And so, okay. So like, I might be going
still available.
Right? I might be going through a rebrand in the near future.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's great things to learn just from that entrepreneurial journey.
For sure. Make sure you scoop up that domain before somebody listens to the podcast.
I did. Oh,
okay,
no.
Good. Awesome. Oh, I'm good.
I saw it. I bought it immediately and it's already redirects to subscriptionattorney.com.
Oh, excellent. So, okay, perfect.
Good. Oh, yeah. But I just found myself using that word so much, like that term, like offload legal. And there's a nice alliteration there. So
I like
anyway,
it.
So like really you guys like, and I think like I, not long after you launched, because I'm trying to stay up to date on all like the, or soft launch Spellbook, I'm trying to stay up to date on all the cool legal tech and stuff that's out there. And I think it was like, yeah, it was maybe like September, October of 2022 that I demoed your software, which at the time was GPT-3, right? Because 3.5 ChatGPT hadn't been released, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I remember thinking,
yeah, that's right.
Like, oh my gosh, there's so much potential here, but like, I feel like the technology isn't there yet. Little did I know, right around the corner, holy moly, was the technology, was it going to be there? So mm-hmm. I'm curious to know, I mean, we'll get into Rally a little bit now, but now that I'm aware of the rebrand, I do want to focus mostly on Spellbook. Plus, you guys just raised a boatload of money. And these episodes don't get published right away, but like you guys raised a boatload of money. So yeah. there's a lot of interest in this. And you guys were there first, like in like the legal space, what I could tell from the drafting side of things. I pride myself on staying up to date and all this stuff. And AI analysis had been there based on machine learning. But not the drafting stuff. You guys are really at the cutting edge, first mover, as far as I could tell in that space. So like, what was it like when ChatGPT came out and now all of a sudden everyone's interested in this generative AI thing and you guys are there? Like, what was that experience like?
Yeah, I mean, it was really interesting. I mean, you know, ChatGPT, of course, is a like a consumer level tool. So it's quite different. But I mean, I think it kind of created this, like, first it went absolutely viral. Like, there was this chart that I saw recently, and it was like days that it took to get to like 1 million users, and it had a bunch of apps, and like Netflix, Instagram, like all these apps, right? And like all these apps used to take like hundreds of days to get to 1 million users, and ChatGPT took like 2.5 days, something like that. Like, it absolutely, and it's like it was by far the fastest, right? It was absolutely crazy how quickly it caught fire in the way that it did. You know, in a lot of ways, it really kind of made lawyers. I mean, you know, when we were building Spellbook, and of course we're leveraging large language models, one of which is at the time GPT-3 when first started, we knew there was going to be a little bit of a learning curve around educating lawyers on generative AI, because it's a whole new category of tooling in a sense. And, you know, lawyers know kind of like SaaS products, template-based automation, practice management tools, whatever. But you know, this kind of generative AI system is going to be a little bit different. And we did figure that we'd have to educate lawyers on it. Now, we didn't think it'd be hard. I mean, whenever we got their attention and they were on a call with us and they hadn't interacted with generative AI systems before, when they see an action and they, you know, ask it to, you know, review a certain document or to summarize whatever, or to draft something specific, and it does it in a really clear, quick way. And it has this kind of like, you know, verbosity and creativity that a human would have. There's definitely kind of that aha moment, and they really do get it, and they get interested. But we, you know, had to gain their trust and had to, you know, educate them that it was a useful tool and not just kind of like fun to use in a day or whatever. And ChatGPT kind of did this like massive instant market education program, in a sense, just by putting this tool out there, making it accessible to everyone, and people, you know, trusting it and getting it and getting use of it right away, and kind of thinking, okay, cool, this kind of scratching the surface of what this technology can do. I want to dig a little bit deeper into, you know, systems that are specific to what I do. And Spellbook was, of course, in the right place at the right time. And it's definitely, luckily for us, taken up a good amount of lawyer mind share and attention in the legal generative AI space. And that's where a lot of people know us. And you know, we're committed to building, I think we have, but continuing to build and iterate on a product that leverages technology in a really useful way for lawyers to make their lives easier.
And you know, and I've seen other tools out there, you know, that like that purport to do like generative AI contract drafting, but seriously, like, you guys were like the first on the scene from what I can recall. And I've not yet seen like a totally similar product. I'm sure they are out there, because, you know, there's so much money to be made, but I remember in the demo, because I did the demo with you, and you were like, you could regenerate it, and it could, if you don't like that response, you could like come up with like another response by like prompting it to like do it again. And it was just like not in my lexicon. Like, I had no idea. I couldn't comprehend it. I'm not technical, but I'm very tech savvy. And it was like, it was like learning another language. And now I have the domain to legalpromptengineer.com, and I am like doing like prompt engineering, and I have a really good handle on LLMs and machine learning, and like,
nice.
Like, you know, and but I wouldn't have no reason to have done that if it wasn't for the virality of ChatGPT and the potential in our profession to do that. And so maybe going back just a little bit with Rally, because I originally discovered you guys because you had a short-lived like 2 podcast episodes on like subscription billing for lawyers as you had a product. Yeah. You were also one of the first ones to have a product for like, we help lawyers with subscriptions, because obviously when you're using a technology tool like Spellbook that's taking away so much time that it used to take to do things, you're seeing like the potential of, well, lawyers could bill in other ways and maybe make more money by using advanced technology that we're providing to lawyers, right? So maybe give us a little bit of background on that and the benefit that you see of not doing billable hours with legal work.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's a great question. So I think like firstly, the subscription billing model is kind of like, as SaaS entrepreneurs, it's like, well, we think it's the best model for the business and for the client, just from first principles. I mean, it's the type of billing system where, you know, the customer is going to get constant, you know, updates and improvements, or at least the company's incentivized to do that for the customer, because the customer continues to pay, and the company is able to put together a really good, you know, financial model where they're incentivized to make the product better and to constantly hunt for better product market fit and constantly iterate on it. And it really just kind of works for both parties in that way. So the SaaS model, like for us, we just think makes a lot of sense for really any industry where there's continuing service. Now, when it comes to like the SaaS model of the last model, legal as a service or subscription billing, or whatever you want to call it, that like we think it's great because I mean, like think of like the two alternatives. So you have flat fee and then you have hourly. So in the case of hourly, it's the lawyer's taking on, or the client's taking on all the risk. You know, they present this unstructured, often unstructured issue to a lawyer, and the lawyer says, okay, I'm going to do the work. This is my rate. And of course, the lawyer has a baked in margin to that rate. And the margin is typically very, very high. Of course, they can only bill so much in a given hour. There's in a given day, so many hours in a given day and given week and so on. And there's a scaling element to that, but that's kind of how the hourly billing model works, a bit of a double-edged sword in that way. But anyway, the lawyer would basically avoid all risk, because if the issue gets very complex and very lengthy and, you know, opposing counsel drags it out or whatever else happens, because the real world, you know, nothing is cut and dry as you expect. There's always a sanding and milling that has to go on that takes longer than you think. The lawyer just bills for their time and they, you know, collect all those fees. The risk is entirely on the client. And that's the way it's been done for a long, long time. Now, it's not exactly that way. I mean, lawyers have to write down hours and they have to keep bills in a realm of what's reasonable, what's ethical, but more or less, pretty much all the risk is on the client. Now, on the flat fee side of things, pretty much all the risk goes to the lawyer. I mean, the lawyer needs to provide a fee up front before the work actually starts, or at least before the work is finished, to the client, and the lawyer is basically promising to do the work to the, you know, best of their ability, you know, for that price. And often what happens is, and I'm sure you've experienced this when you do flat fee billing, if you have the work gets extra complex and there's a lot of issues, and it kind of becomes like a bit of an ethical issue. Like the lawyer at that point might be losing money, but they kind of have to complete the matter because they don't want to put their client in a bad place legally or cut any corners which could result in them being negligent. But they also know that they need to, you know, feed their family and need to work with other clients that are actually paying them. And there's a bit of a conflict there. So I think subscription billing for like a limited scope of services is probably better than both those alternatives. I mean, both the lawyer and the client are taking on risk in this situation. The lawyer, because they kind of, they have a prescription that there's thought that has gone into kind of like what's included in the subscription billing. And, you know, often from the lawyers that we've talked with that are doing this sort of subscription billing, you know, there'll be a baked in like number of hours that are capped or something like that. So if it goes beyond that, it'll be an hourly bill and it could come at a discount or something like that. The lawyer kind of knows the business. It's so they're able to kind of get the work done a lot more efficiently because I already know the business, they work with them. At least we talk about like, you know, GC as a service type billing, which we've seen the most for subscription legals. So they know the business. The client gets the peace of mind of not needing to worry about bills on a month-to-month basis. They've come kind of about like a mini insurance policy on like their day-to-day legals. And yeah, I mean, I think it works well for both parties in this sort of situation where it's kind of like a general counsel as a service and both parties know each other. And the lawyer is kind of that insurance policy as they encounter with the legal issues that the you know, business is guaranteed to encounter. So I think for that reason, you know, we've always loved the idea of subscription legal billing in principle. Yeah.
And yet there was not, and there's kind of still not like a perfect solution for having that kind of a law practice. I mean, really, when I've been giving the CLE since March of this year, of 2023, and the only two solutions that I'm aware of that, like, say, we do subscriptions for lawyers is Fidoo and Rally. And, like, that's it. And there's really, and you guys do it differently because there's no, like, one way to do it. Like, you track time, you're tracking time. Like, there's a, you know, it's easy to build that into an app. But to do a subscription type practice is something that's unique and we're still figuring it out. That's why my podcast could even exist.
Right.
So my biggest problem with legal tech is most legal tech companies are building where the profession is, not where it's going. And I think that I mean, I know why they do that, because that's where the money is to be made, because you have to build for, you know, why people are going to pay you dollars. But you didn't do that. I mean, you are doing that, but you're also building for where the profession should be going. Why even philosophically make that kind of a decision?
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to the legal subscription example, so do you want me to talk about legal subscription example or like the generative AI example? Because it kind of applies to both, I think.
I think it applies to both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, in the legal subscription example, I mean, like, you know, as a company, we're constantly running experiments. We're constantly trying new things, kind of seeing what the market thinks. I mean, you know, if you believe in a contrarian truth that isn't normalized yet, and you happen to be right, there's a tremendous opportunity if you're kind of the first provider of that. And you know, you have a vision that you think other people will align with, only they can see it. And if that does actually happen, you know, there's a great opportunity. So I think like, you know, maybe selfishly from a business standpoint, we're trying to find opportunities that they're basically future truths or truths that the majority of people in our market are going to agree with at a future point in time. When it came to subscription billing, I think it's definitely true, but again, like, we just had an idea as SaaS company founders, how lawyers could builder clients and have clients we build and thought that it was a better solution overall for a certain type of legal services. I mean, obviously for like, you know, litigation or something, it might not work, but we thought it was really good for a certain type of legal service. And we wanted to create a tool out there to see if lawyers were interested in experimenting with this. And yeah, that's pretty much the reason why we started offering subscription specific elements to our Rally tool to lawyers. And on the generative AI side, I think it was like a similar conviction. We just thought, okay, like lawyers aren't going to want to practice law without a tool like this, without having a, you know, generative AI assistant with them at all moments that doesn't get sick and is always available and is willing to stay up till 3 a.m. with them on a certain deal they're working on. And you know, that was kind of the thesis that we had. And yeah, I think that's proven to be true for the most part.
Yeah.
It's a similar idea.
You know, if any lawyers are interested, obviously links in the show notes. I'm sure they could book a demo to like see Spellbook, right? Like you'll have.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Right. Like that's available. So if you really want to do the deep dive on Spellbook, get that demo scheduled. But just for podcast purposes, especially since right now this is an audio first podcast, like describe for us, Daniel, what Spellbook is exactly for those who haven't heard of it before, like what it does, like what the interface looks like, where and how somebody's operating. Is it web browser? Is it in Word? Like what, like give that overview for my listeners.
For sure. So yeah, so Spellbook is a generative AI system that enables lawyers to draft in documents and review documents right in Microsoft Word. So it's a Word add-in. So when a lawyer is in any Word document, whether it's a shareholder agreement or a contract or a letter or anything that's of legal substance, what they can activate the Spellbook icon and the system will load up right in Microsoft Word on the right-hand side of the document. Now, Spellbook can do a handful of things. First and foremost, it's a chatbot that is fully legally trained. It's almost like having a mini paralegal or assistant loaded up in the document that happens to know every character in the document entirely. So you can ask it any question you'd like. You can pull up a contract that you drafted and was executed, let's say 6 months ago for a business client. And let's say the counterparty, you know, did something odd and you're like, hey, Spellbook, party X did Y. Does this constitute a breach? And then Spellbook will read through the document and start giving you an answer. And they'll say, hey, you know, based on these sections, this may be a breach based on definition of this. And, you know, you'd be incentivized at that point to look into it and see if it, basically the starting point created from asking Spellbook. Now, can also draft for you. If you're working on a document and you need to add, you know, a new provision, or you need to rewrite a provision, or you want to add a whole addendum, you can ask Spellbook to do that for you. You can just say, hey, you know, draft a data privacy addendum to this master service agreement that complies with the, you know, CCPA, and, you know, make sure to include this, and also make sure it's simple enough that the, you know, the unsophisticated non-lawyer client would be able to understand it. And if you ask it to do that, it will do that. And it won't give you one, it'll give you three. And you can ask it to give you as many as you want.
Right.
And you can edit those.
And if I had an indemnification clause that was sent by on the paper of the other party, and I said, I could say, make this indemnification clause a mutual indemnification clause, and it will do that for me.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It'll definitely do that. I mean, it can accept really any plain language request. It will do that. And additionally, I know it's not a video first podcast, but I do want to show you, we recently released our new automated markup functionality. So, you know, right now I'm in a shareholder agreement, and this is one that I actually generated with Rally, but I'm in a shareholder agreement and I pulled up the review tab, and I'll show you what the review tab looks like before you prompt it. So you hit the review tab and you have a handful of options to review the document in any way you'd like. The general will just review it from the lens of a lawyer trying to improve it. So it's going to improve it in a nonpartisan way. It's going to improve it based on to make the document better generally, whether it's a pleading or a contract or a corporate governance document. It's going to try and improve it, whether it's spelling or grammar or things that are more legally proper, whatever, more clear. When it comes to negotiation, you can actually ask Spellbook to automatically mark up a document in the interest of a specific party. So in this case, it'll read every party in the document contract like this, and I can, you know, select the party I wanted to negotiate for, hit negotiation. I'll have to give it a couple minutes because it is going through every line of the document, and it's going to start automatically generating comments and red lines to the document that benefit the specific party. So you can basically get a marked up version of the contract that benefit the party that you represent instantly. Now, the real power of reviews comes from the custom component. So you can instruct Spellbook to mark up a document based on specific instructions. It can be anything you want. We even have customers, and this is a new feature that we're releasing very shortly, customers basically upload like playbooks to Spellbook. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, this is my playbook for reviewing. Let's say you work at like a real estate shop and you have like, you know, you have a playbook for reviewing commercial leases that you get from, you know, I don't know, from landlords, something like that. And you want to check for certain things and comment certain things or whatever, you can upload that playbook, which could be, you know, pages to Spellbook, and then have Spellbook read a document and mark it up based on the playbook that you uploaded to it. So to give you a really basic example, and this is a shareholder agreement. And I just said, find any risk to minority shareholders. And you can see it started to generate these risks in the application. So it's not actually gonna, it's not gonna mark it up right away. It'll stage every change. And I can read through all of these. And, you know, if I like them, I can, you know, apply them piece by piece, or I can, what I'm gonna do now is just hit apply all. And Spellbook's gonna instantly start flagging any risk based on the instructions and providing an explanation as a comment right into the document. So, you know, the end result is a document, you know, marked up with comments specific to what you're looking for. So anyway, this feature is quite new. Actually, is currently being released. By the time the podcast gets published, I'm guaranteed it'll be fully released.
Yeah.
But yeah, so this is another really interesting component of Spellbook that, you know, any lawyer could use it up.
Keep this open for a second, Daniel. So trying to use like the parlance of at least today for like going into like if somebody hasn't used a legal specific generative AI tool yet, this is like your buttons in the Spellbook tab show general and negotiation and custom. And so like general and negotiation, those are essentially pre-built prompts that you click the button, you've built the prompt, it does the thing that those prompts that you've built do. But then the custom tab is I can prompt it myself for what I want to see.
Yeah. I mean, it's not quite that simple. They're not just prompts. So these actually use a few LLMs, these specific ones, and they're going to be kind of bouncing between them for certain things. But this is based off a model that was effectively a prompt or a set of prompts, a model that we've built, you know, with our product team, with the lawyers that we work with, to provide a general improvement to the document, the legal document, you know, based on our model. Now, eventually you'll be able to tune this model. Maybe you don't want to interact with a free form of actually typing something in, and this is my prompt, but instead throttle the model for, let's see, throttle the model for how conservative you want it to be, or how aggressive you want it to be, or how verbose you want it to be, or other things like that, other parameters like that. We'll build like a set of parameters you can interact with. But yeah, I mean, this is basically like a model to improve it. And the negotiation model is just that. It's a model to improve and negotiate for a specific party. And again, you'll be able to throttle like how one-sided you want it to be, or just flag really flagrant issues for your client. Just flag those. You can do that if you want a more minimalistic approach. So that's kind of how it works, I guess, from a high level.
Right. And so I think Richard Tromis, who's like the artificial lawyer, he has said to lawyers, don't learn prompt engineering because there are going to be tools like what Spellbook is, where like you don't have to know how to prompt engineer, because there will be like, you could tweak the module, check these boxes, uncheck these boxes, you know, or something. And then like the model will update based upon your wants. So you don't have to learn the prompt engineering. All that stuff is kind of done in the background. It's like that.
Yeah. Sort of yeah.
What you're doing. Okay.
Yeah, definitely. I guess the next stage is like the computer just kind of detect your mood and then know what to review for. Right. That's the next step.
BCI, right? Brain computer interface. Right. Then it'll just do it all in virtual reality. So all in the metaverse. But another thing I just want to say, just for the, if you're not watching this video, now I feel I have to get this video out a lot sooner. Daniel, thank you. No, it's good. I need it. I need the kick in the butt to get the video published. But is when you apply it into the Word document, then it's showing up in track changes. So when you send this to the other side, if they're not using Spellbook, it's all in the track changes. So the other side can see it too, right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Very cool. All right. Well, since you got it up, is there anything else you want to show me while you've got this up? Otherwise, I have other questions for you.
I mean, we could turn into a demo, but we'll put it on a brief one. So, I mean, yeah, as I mentioned before, you know, in the spells tab like this, this is where you can interact with the chatbot and kind of talk to this LLM-based lawyer that you can work with. So I can ask that any question. I could say something like, what happens if a shareholder, you know, dies during a company share sale transaction, but prior to closing, right? That's kind of like a, you know, a possible fact that could emerge. And, you know, you could ask Spellbook, but hey, this eventuality may happen, and it will try and, you know, give you an answer. And it's going to refer to some mechanisms, probably some voluntary transfer mechanisms in the document that you can start looking at. So So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of a chatbot.
This is why I don't think the legal, like being an attorney is ever going to go away, even if AI like really takes over as a dominant tool in the space, is because knowing the right question to ask, this goes back to your philosophy degree, Daniel, which I have a philosophy degree as well, right? Like,
oh, very nice.
Knowing the right questions to ask is a really important thing. Knowing the jargon, yeah. knowing how to better interpret what the AI spits out in response is still a valuable skill. So what a lawyer may look like might be very different in the future with tools like this. I still feel like the profession isn't going anywhere. Is that sort of your take on it too?
Yeah, I mean, 100%. I mean, like we put our chips on that bet for sure. I think if we really thought that we could, you know, just create like a DIY lawyer bot, we would have done that. UPL be damned, we would have done that. But I mean, we're servicing lawyers because, you know, people are always going to want to be able to call somebody that knows what they're doing to help them with things that happen to be the most important things they're going to interact with, like the shares of their business or marriage or criminal issues or whatever it might be. And, you know, lawyers provide, you know, that service. So, I mean, I don't think that's going away anytime soon. We, very early days, and this is like circa 2019, 2018, we were experimenting with a kind of DIY legal tool, kind of like a LegalZoom-esque tool, I guess, but a little more specialized for entrepreneurs. And, you know, we found that a lot of our user testing early on that there was this kind of like DIY anxiety where like even though they got the documents they needed, they didn't know what they didn't know. And that was really the issue. Because like they wanted somebody to kind of give them documents and say, hey, these are the right documents versus just somebody giving you the documents and it's a machine. You don't really know. So, I mean, like lawyers add, like that's tremendously valuable. And that's not going to be, machine will not be able to take that away, I don't think.
When I went solo, I pivoted from mostly litigation to a transactional-only practice. I did not have a database of documents to automate. That's why a business and employment legal document database and automation tool like 650 is super useful. I can rely on the quality of the documents in 650's database since they're putting excellent legal minds to work curating and updating their documents and automations over time. When you're not billing by the hour, outsourcing and efficiency matters, and 650 can help you scale your practice to get high-quality documents drafted in less time. Use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED at 650.com and when being onboarded to get 10% off. If you're not a business and employment attorney or you have your own documents that you'd prefer to use, then my next sponsor, Gavel, is the automation tool for you. Gavel allows you to build shareable, client-facing workflow and document automations. In other words, Gavel helps you create a legal practice where attorneys can monetize the value they bring clients in productized form and scale via subscriptions and flat fees. Use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED at gavel.io to get 10% off an annual subscription. There's no one right way to automate and scale your practice, but with one or both of my sponsors, 650 and Gavel, you can take your subscription law firm to the next level. Links to both in the show notes. Now back to the show. But you can still productize legal services to a certain extent up until that point, right?
For sure,
so
yeah.
like with your tool, I wonder, because I'm looking at your RaileyLegal.com is still live.
So yes, you can go, of course.
You go and you can look at the pricing there, which is like, you know, priced reasonably for solo small firm shops, which you also don't get a lot with legal tech. Some of the things I see in there, like some automation type features, could I say in Spellbook build out like a template database and then like integrate it into the Raleigh like portal system for my clients and like have my own version of LegalZoom?
Yeah. So the answer is yes, you could do that. That is something that the system would allow for. Yeah. So we do have a productization of legal services feature built into Raleigh. So you can, yeah, I mean, you can productize services with a specific price and host those on a website or a landing page and have prospective clients or existing clients, you know, interact with those, pay for a la carte legal services right from a website. That is something that you can do with Raleigh. Yes. As far as, you know, mirroring Spellbook to it, basically use Spellbook to build your templates for you or build template versions of model documents that you happen to really like, that's 100% where we're going with it. I mean, we're really going to try and, you know, make Raleigh a lot. You know, one thing that we've dealt with Raleigh is the time to value issue. Like a lawyer would say, okay, this is great. I'd love to generate document sets from a template library versus a traditional way, which, as you know, Matthew, is pulling old documents, editing them for the matter you're working on. The template-based automation is a lot more efficient and enjoyable. And if you're billing on a flat fee or subscription basis, it's money you're saving or earning, rather. But the time to value issue is always a problem because lawyers have to find the model documents and then templatize them. And once they're templatized, it's all done by hand, by a human for the most part. There's some tooling that helps, but it's really done by a human at the end of the day. It's kind of set in stone. If you find a better document down the road, you're kind of like, okay, now I already have this templatized version of an old one that I like less than the new one. So if we can use generative AI to templatize the documents for us, this can enable a really quick feedback loop where you kind of, you know, have the documents you want, get them onto Rally, and have template-based automation, regardless of how you're practicing, really, really quickly. So that's exactly where we're going with it. So stand by for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. Another question I have for you, this is a very self-interested question, but I think any of my listeners would also be interested is, you know, I am looking for that like legal tech or just tech software that lets me do like a Shopify-like experience for my subscribers, right? Like they come on at $20 a month, which is my starting package, and then all the way up to $5,000 a month. And I want it to be, they don't even need to interact with me and they could switch subscription levels. They could buy things a la carte that are outside of their subscription. They could do subscription add-ons that they could add on and take off whenever they want. Is that something that Rally that you're able to do with that? Does it require a lot of customization? If yes, like how does one do that?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I mean, I think the answer right now is that can kind of be done with Rally, or for the most part, it can be done, but it will require a little bit of customization on your end. So just to, you know, just to share a screen again, I apologize for the audio listeners right now. If I go to this state law firm website called firm.rallylegal, and I click the subscription plans button, it will take me to kind of like a mocked up version of what the subscription plans could look like if you just feature these on your website. And you know, each of these, well, I put these together just on a whim. But if you were to click on one of these, it will take you to the kind of like Rally app itself where the client, prospective client could create an account, fill out a questionnaire, and actually have it generate a subscription agreement for you based off the plan they had selected. So it can do that. And then once they're in the client portal, they can buy documents they'd want. But, you know, as far as like upgrading to different tiers and having the kind of full Shopify experience, I don't think it will really deliver that right now. You'll have to, there'll be kind of a manual component with a lot of that.
I just did a guest appearance on, I mean, what is time in the podcast space? Because things get published at different times. But I did a guest appearance on the Legal Tech Startup Focus podcast with Charlie Uniman. And like, that was my request to hit his audience, which are legal tech founders, is like, I need a Shopify experience for me. But I also don't think there are a lot of lawyers who would necessarily sign up for that. So like, why build the thing? You know,
that's
my podcast is trying to create that market for the legal tech founders who want to build that. But like timing is everything. And I think we're really early in that space. But I would so love a tool that lets me do that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it would be cool.
Yeah. But it sounds like the really potential is there with your current product. The potential is certainly there.
Yeah, it certainly is there. But I mean, I think like one thing about being a startup like ours is you need to be real with the fact that you can't win everything. So you do need to make concessions here and there. And, you know, at the moment we really are focused on the generative AI stuff. So, I mean, yeah, it could happen, but it's not in the immediate product roadmap. I'll say that.
So we're getting close to time here. And I feel like even though this is kind of what I'm doing with Law Subscribed is like activist journalism, because like, I'm trying to kill the billable hour, right? I'm trying to eliminate the billable hour, but I want to show that I could engage in like some hard-hitting journalism from time to time. So the questions that people are asking about generative AI now, I'm going to throw your way here. So like, if I'm putting client contracts into Spellbook, is these LLMs that are being, are they being trained on that confidential client information?
No, they're not. So yeah. So again, we use a set of large language models right now, and we have our own kind of Spellbook layer on top of those, which is tuned and trained to interact with the LLMs in a specific way and to generate outputs that are going to be very different from the raw LLM experience. And of course, there'd be application layer built on top of that, which I showed you the front end of that. So the way in which we interact with the LLMs is such that we have data processing agreements that are very strict, where any data that is processed by the LLM is encrypted in transit as it gets transferred via API to the LLM. And once the LLM processes it and generates an output, which is of course served as Spellbook, the data, which would have been processed by the LLM, is actually deleted and it's encrypted and it's not used for training. And we had to, you know, put together an agreement like this because, you know, we really understand lawyer-client privilege. You know, I'm a lawyer, where we've been in the legal tech space so long, and that data is just so sacred and important. It's the most sacred thing. So yeah, I mean, we structured, you know, Spellbook's use of the LLMs in a way where the data is secure and not being used by LLM. Now, I guess one consequence is we aren't able to train the system to use outputs that maybe wouldn't be as good in the best way possible because the data is so sacred and being deleted and not being used to train the model. We think it's a worthy trade-off, and we are able to learn from how users interact with it in other ways without sacrificing the security of the data.
Right. Yeah, that is definitely a trade-off, because that's where my mind went. My mind went to, well, I know why we need to do this, also as a practicing attorney, but wow, like you could get the ultimate contract drafting AI solution if you could train it on that stuff, right? A lot faster, mm-hmm. a lot sooner than you would when you have to protect that stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think like we still do get a good amount of that training from how it's interacted with, definitely. But yeah, I mean, there's the data stuff is sacred. So we are giving up a little bit there. There's no question.
Like, I wonder if there's a like, I don't know if it's LLM in a box or like LLM layered training or something in a box where like I, the law firm, can choose to not delete that data and like have like a uniquely trained LLM for my practice. You know, is there a way to maybe do something like that where it's segmented for each law firm that's used? And then this may be like on the product roadmap, Daniel, so I don't mean to like reveal your product roadmap, but do you think something like that is like even possible?
Yeah, absolutely. It is possible. It can look like a few different things. And we are definitely working in that direction. So.
Very cool. And then again, just sort of one more hard hitting journalism question.
Yeah, for sure. Please.
You said multiple LLMs. Is that something yes. that you're able to disclose which LLMs and not necessarily the models per se, but like OpenAI, Anthropic, like, you know, like what are you, if you can tell us where you're pulling from?
Yeah. So I'm not exactly sure 100% what I can say. I'll have to ask the other product team on that. But
we can't. I will tell you this. I promise you, journalistic integrity. If you can't say it, you let me know. This won't go live for at least a couple of months. So I'll send you the final recording and you could say, actually, can you cut that out? And I will happily.
So I can say this. We are using Anthropic. We are using those. You mentioned those. So we are using those. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. But maybe not limited to those.
That's right.
All right. Good. My listeners need to know. I can engage in some real journalism from time to time. That's fascinating. I mean, it's a really interesting product. I think. Here's a question for you that's more relevant to the actual theme of the podcast, which is, how many lawyers would you say are using like Rally and or Spellbook are billing time compared to not billing time?
What do you mean, like using the system to bill time or
no? So
using subscription or flat fee?
I'll rephrase. Is it an easier sell to your target market if the lawyers are not billing their time versus they are billing time?
As in, so for lawyers that bill hourly exclusively, is it easier to sell to them versus lawyers that bill on a flat fee basis or a subscription basis?
Yes.
Okay. You know what? Surprisingly, it is not any easier or difficult to bill to sell to a lawyer that is billing time or if they're not billing time. It really doesn't seem to matter that much, which we did find surprising. I think with Spellbook, like we really don't push the ROI that much in the sale. We don't. We push the quality of life improvement and the power of the system and really kind of let that shine. You know, occasionally lawyers will push us on ROI. There's no question, especially the hourly billing lawyers. And, you know, the fact is, you know, if you're a practicing lawyer and you bill hourly, if you spend an hour on a call with a client working through a complex legal issue with them, actually doing what you thought you'd do when you were in law school, for example, versus spending an hour in a Microsoft Word document, you know, copying and pasting and figuring out ways to, you know, change a term the 56 times that it comes up in the contract because of, you know, an email you have, for example, you bill the same for each of those hours, right? And with Spellbook, you won't be able to change the hours spent on the phone with the client, but it will make those hours that are much more monotonous and frustrating a lot less so. In fact, they even eliminate a lot of the time you spend on them entirely. And, you know, we give you the freedom to be able to call in an AI legal assistant to help you get through those moments of drudgery a lot quicker. So yeah, I mean, really the ROI stuff hasn't come up too much. And when we explain it that way to lawyers, even those that, you know, bill hourly and are afraid of having less time to bill for because of tools like this, they still seem to appreciate it, get it, and more often than not buy it.
Yeah. And it's a labor crunch for hiring lawyers or just for hiring assistants or paralegals or what have you. So like, instead of paying a salaried person, you know, I don't think this is going to replace anybody, like, and people are going to lose their jobs. It will just let law firms grow and scale without having to hire more especially in the labor crunch. So I feel like that's a selling point of using AI in general, let alone Spellbook.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely functions that, you know, a human does that it can do. I will say that.
Yeah, I know. I don't want to scare anybody away from the technology. But kudos to you then for continuing to sell this to billable hour attorneys, because I think my prediction is they will quickly see, with how powerful tools like these are, that billing time is not the most profitable way you can make money when you're using incredibly powerful legal tech tools that are powered by artificial intelligence. So I think that it's a stepping stone in the direction of stopping, you know, billing by the hour when they're using these tools, and the gears start turning and they have access to products like Rally that let you productize things. Like, all of a sudden, like, lawyers are smart, you know, the light bulbs go off of, hey, maybe I could bill this way, maybe I could bill that way. So thank you is what I'm trying to say, Daniel.
Awesome. No, bold prediction. I like it.
So with that, we've got a few minutes left. Anything else you want to share about the future of Spellbook, the future of the company formerly known as Rally?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say that we you know, as you mentioned earlier, we raised a bunch of money very recently, which is awesome. We're putting that money right to work on a ton of product improvements and changes. I mean, the product's going to look completely different and be significantly better by the end of this year. I can only imagine what next year has as far as our product roadmap goes. And we're delivering, you know, updates and improvements super fast. So I'm just really excited about where we're taking the product. And I think it's really going to help lawyers in their day-to-day experience. And we fully believe that. You've never been more certain about something like this. So really, really awesome to be able to watch it grow. And I hope your listeners want to check us out at spellbook.legal and book a demo if you'd like, so you can see it in action.
Yeah. And I see on the Spellbook website that you guys are hiring. One of the benefits of getting a lot of money is you start hiring. So, you know, never know. I have some people on legal tech that listen to this podcast. And so, you know, none of the roles I see are like lawyer related specifically. But for the non-attorneys listening, or those who are thinking about becoming a recovering attorney, there are some openings as well with Spellbook. So definitely check those out.
Yeah. Yeah. And we will be hiring lawyers in the future. So.
All right. Very cool. With that, I'll ask you the question that is the reason why my listeners actually stick around, which is, Daniel, is a hot dog a sandwich and why?
I think a hot dog is not a sandwich because the bun's connected and that negates the fact that it was a taco sandwich. Same thing. No, it's a taco.
If you rip the bun in half or break the taco shell in half, does it be now, you know, ex post facto become a sandwich?
100%, without question.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Logically consistent. That's what I like to see. Yeah. So you already started to mention it, but just in case, anywhere else, where could people find you or follow up?
Yeah. So best way to connect with us is go to spellbook.legal. I'd be able to sign up to the wait list, which would basically mean one of our sales reps will reach out to you almost immediately. And if you want to shoot me an email personally, please send me an email at daniel@rallylegal.com. And I'm on LinkedIn. And yeah.
All right. Great. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, Law Subscribed.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And that's our show. Thanks again to 650 and Gavel for being sponsors. The best way for others to discover this show is for you to share it with somebody you think would find value from it. Follow me on LinkedIn, since that's where I'm most active on social media, and click the bell towards the top right of my profile to get notified about all of my posts about this podcast and everything else I think is valuable for you to see. To get in touch, message me on LinkedIn or email kurbis@lawsubscribed.com. All links are in the show notes. Until next time, this is Matthew Kurbis with Law Subscribed.